You're listening to my best two buddies, faces made strictly for radio and not for TV, John Nicholson and Pedro.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 42. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me as always is my dear friend, Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, man?
I'm indexing.
You're indexing? Is that like what all the cool kids are saying now? What's this new slang?
I'm indexing my databases. I'm optimizing my queries. I'm hanging out here in Palo with the Oracle Masters this week.
Oh, nice. Nice. Look at you.
I'm learning the lingo. Yeah.
You're learning the lingo.
I am profoundly dumbfounded.
Very nice. Well, John, we are so excited this week. I know I am, because we have the opportunity to interview one of Cohesity's newest employees, and I'll give you a hint who it is. Any ideas?
Oh, man.
Rolo, Mr. Rollinson Rivera, how you doing, sir?
Pretty good, man. How you guys doing?
Good. You sound like you're in an airport. Is that what's going on?
That's the life.
You traveling a lot these days.
Yeah, quite a bit. Way, way, way more than I used to. But, you know, that's what it is.
Is that a G7 in the background waiting to pick you up?
Well, I have it on hold for a few minutes, but you know how it is. When it comes to winning hearts and kissing babies, I got to do it fast and in a pretty good, decent plane.
Yeah, Cohesity's making a name for themselves. I don't want to jump ahead of us. So why don't we do a little, let's back up a little bit. So Rollinson, you left VMware not too long ago. You were killing it with vSAN here, and now you're at Cohesity. What are you doing over there?
Well, I'm here trying to help the team redefine secondary storage. Some really good opportunities, some really big challenges that need to be addressed in the data center, taking the principles of hyperconvergence, you know, obviously something that I'm kind of familiar with the whole vSAN stuff, kind of deliver that into a new world here.
And by new world, what do you mean by that?
You know, the world is kind of going through this whole thing about, you know, digital transformation, which you guys probably should be very familiar with, which is a pretty big thing at VMware. But beyond the marketing and the stuff and the fancy terms, the reality is that there's a ridiculous amount of data and information being generated, and it's not properly managed and handled within the data center today. And that's what we're trying to make better in that particular space.
Yeah, but I thought we could just put all my cat photos inside an Oracle database, you know, and that's where they go, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, and that works too. And then where are you going to put that big old database with all your cat photos? It's got to go somewhere properly handled.
No, I mean, that's been a central theme this week, is talking about data management and things like that. And it's interesting seeing out there. There's, as you say, it's you know, that classic iceberg picture where there's primary storage up top, and then there's the 14 copies of data and
yep.
unstructured NAS filers and backups and tapes and all that stuff just kind of lurking behind. It's a scary amount of stuff to get a handle on.
Yeah. I mean, when you're dealing with, you know, petabytes and petabytes of data and information coming in a way that it wasn't before as a result of this whole transformation of the world, just imagine what happens. And some of the things that are happening are part of our current event life. You know, look at all the breaches, all the WikiLeaks, all the ransomware things that are happening. That's a result of not being able to successfully manage and handle and maintain and access and have access to information correctly.
So Rollo, you're a vSAN expert. I would definitely put you in that category. Let me throw some devil's advocate at you. With the price of storage and flash getting so cheap, why wouldn't I just throw everything on vSAN and call it a day?
You can, but as you'll see that even with the price of the devices getting cheaper, the reasons as to why some of these products are made and designed, they're not always meant to work and serve the same use cases and purposes. vSAN was designed to be an F1, you know, race car, basically. Yeah. And that's what you get every day. Every time you put, you know, you don't even have to do anything. You put a new type of device in there and it gives you 2x and 4x performance increase.
Yep.
But when you look at some of the architectures and some of the products and how they're designed, you know, we talk about how vSAN leverages some of the, you know, the tiers that it has and the destaging, some of the process that goes on. When you have a lot of information that is not, you know, continuously being accessed, and it's something that doesn't have a sub-millisecond latency sort of requirement in SLA, cold data per se, right? You don't want to utilize a system that is designed to give you the best possible performance in the industry for something that's just going to maintain information that's going to not be as frequently accessed, right? And some of these things have limitations on the type of capabilities that they can do in terms of not performance related, but you know, when you think about infinite number of snapshots capabilities and all these other things that are needed for this other sort of space.
That was something that came up this week talking to some of the Oracle DBAs. They're often, you know, some developer will want a full copy of a 50 terabyte database and they'll want four copies to go, you know, play with for a day or two and then destroy that. And historically, sometimes people would try to do that on the primary array, but now you're mixing production and non-production IO. And if you can offload that and leverage, you know, that secondary copy for something besides just backup, that's a pretty powerful position.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, John. Obviously, you know, being able to use your primary infrastructure for the performance, the actual immediate access that you want is one thing. But if you can offload that in the sense when you want to get access to the same type of information and not have to use the same kind of data path to deteriorate potentially the performance of what you're trying to achieve is a bonus, right? Now, being able to do that effectively on something that can be utilized and not just sits there. It's not just sitting there where it creates a problem for you to kind of maybe get access to information, or even just imagine how difficult it is today when you say, I want to get a 40 terabyte database. I want to do some testing. And how are you going to do that? How are you going to get that? Right. You got to use power. You got to move data probably potentially. You got to use it. You don't want to use that on the same system because obviously you're going to put a really big constraint on that.
All right. So I'll buy that. And that makes sense to me that we would put that onto a secondary storage. But I'm really excited to hear from you. What is the software? What is Cohesity doing on the software side to make that data that I use on this secondary storage more beneficial to me?
So from my time here, what I've gathered from the majority of folks when I ask around, what's Cohesity? For the most part, folks think is a backup solution, a backup software. And in reality, backup is one of the things that they get from the product. So Cohesity has a data platform software that is enterprise, you know, designed catered specifically to the enterprise. And you know, when you talk about that, what does that mean? Well, think about every potential or every possible storage capability or feature that is needed in the enterprise from a platform perspective. That comes along with space efficiency capabilities, you know, native capable snapshots, which are fancy and, you know, patent copyrighted type of new technology there. So all of these things that we look at in the enterprise from a storage perspective, they are there, but the platform has been specifically designed to converge secondary workflows. And when people say secondary workflows, because now, you know, we have to work on this new definition, is anything that doesn't have an SLA with a you know, performance latency type of requirement, you know, sub-millisecond latency, IOPS, that kind of thing. So now you're able to take functions like, you know, file services, you know, capabilities that can be offered from the same platform. You can have space efficiency features that you can offer through there, present yourself as a target to many different solutions and products that are out there, while at the same time also deliver, you know, a function for data protection, a very really good solution in that particular space. So when you think about that, the things that we do well, including with test and dev, when you kind of compare that to what we do with primary storage, for example, for vSAN, they're not the same, right? So we're looking at these sort of secondary functions, things that you do within the data center that are all now collapsed and converge into one data platform, which is the software, right? Today, Cohesity has an appliance, but remember, the appliance is just a delivery vehicle. The software is what actually delivers and it has all the power.
Okay. And the software, you guys have a new version that just came out like a couple of weeks ago, right?
Yep. So we announced the new version, and actually the new version is, you know, it basically includes some really, really incredible enhancements to the platform itself. And just to be, you know, fairly quick, we introduced support for S3. So Cohesity, you know, one of the things that it does is that it connects to the cloud natively, AWS, Azure, you know, Google, you name it, or even they don't even have to be the mega clouds. Anything that has a sort of an S3 compliant type of target thing for the things we do will work. But now you can use Cohesity as an S3 target, right? Object store. So that's something that's very powerful there for many different use cases, applications related, whether you're going to do archival, whatever it is. So we know we can use S3 for that particular case. The enhancement to the supportability integration with VMware, with vSphere, one of my favorite things is that, you know, as vSphere admins for as many years as we've done, you know, vSphere admins have adopted the operating function or model of operating or dealing with the infrastructure utilizing VMware folders, VM folders, tags, right? Those things are really, really nice. So now when it comes to protecting the infrastructure, you can now define those protection levels at folder levels. so that if there's a, you know, different roles and capabilities within the infrastructure, maybe John, you're now managing Oracle databases, right? You put all your Oracle databases into one folder and just, you know, apply your protection policies there. And it will dynamically, through the life cycle, very much like we do with vSAN, policy-driven everything, you know, everything you put in that folder is protected across clouds, across different places. So it makes it very nice. The other thing that was introduced was the ability to allow something that's very critical in a lot of different verticals in the industry when it comes to information retention and being able to keep it in a read format only, something called WARM, write once, read many, that kind of approach, right? So when you get into these scenarios, if there's some sort of lawsuit or something that someone says, or there's a compliance act that says, I need to retain data in read format for X amount of time, right? You now have that ability to do that and present that kind of information in that particular place. So it's very nice.
So that immutability lock, that's something that really, that's an enterprise. That's the big guys.
Yeah.
That's also always a fun feature, though. You got to be careful with turning it on on accident, and then you can't delete anything.
Well, the thing is that you have it when you do that enough, there's a time that you set for that. You'll say, you know, you cannot modify the data on this particular presentation that we're presenting for during this time, this period in time. Beyond that time, someone can actually, you know, someone with the right privileges, with the right access, can actually go and modify, that sort of feature.
No, that makes sense. You offload that to your compliance people so they can enforce locks on those data sets. Stepping back to the S3, this is an interesting one because going back to your comments earlier about digital transformation, people are starting to rewrite applications. I joked about putting cat pictures in databases, but cat
but
pictures.
You're not.
And, yeah,
you're
it's, not. Yeah, it, you shouldn't be. They should.
It's a real thing.
Yeah, yeah. But the fundamental thing, though, is developers are realizing that there's data sets that they're not for traditional databases. They're not for even NoSQL. They need objects with metadata. And being able to do that, but at the same time, I have a lot of conversations people have, oh, we'll just put everything in S3. And I'm like, all right, you know, obviously, besides the billing aspects of dealing with it going all the way out to that cloud providers exporting S3, you now have throughput concerns. You've got WAN performance concerns. Being able to bring that object store locally, work with it. I mean, I know it's still not generally a latency sensitive app, but at least you've got a bit more throughput and horsepower in and out. And then I assume you can strategically replicate that out to others. So you could do like an archive copy or a secondary copy at a cloud provider also, or.
Yeah, you better believe it. That's a point. And that's actually one of the things that are becoming extremely relevant because, look, you know that when I was at VMware, you guys being there too, the whole conversation about getting people to go to the cloud.
Yep.
And in reality, you know, pumping data to the cloud is one thing, but we know that the expense to get it back from the cloud, that's where it gets really heavy. So imagine you have the ability to now, you know, with the technology that lets you do it effectively, where you can go both ways. And, you know, Cohesity has the ability to do space efficiency features on the cloud. But also the data that's transferred back in the different cases, depending on how those things are being configured and set up, you're now dealing with CBT, change block tracking. So you can instantiate clusters, you know, in the mega clouds or different cloud service providers and use S3 as your either not only can we be a source, but as a target. Because, you know, today Cohesity in the current release lets you utilize, you know, these cloud providers for S3. But now the point is that you can now point it back to us the other way around, which is a pretty significant capability as you know, the world turns and how we're going around now.
When you're bringing public cloud platform as a service features into the enterprise rather than necessarily forcing people to go to the cloud to consume something, you're actually bringing aspects of the cloud to the traditional data center.
Correct. Correct.
So what cloud integration do you have with? Are all the big boys?
All the big boys. Put it this way, anything that has an S3 compatible API, we're there.
So AT&T Synaptic, Terramark, I mean, everybody's got an S3 compatible who's correct. In that space. So correct. SoftLayer.
Yep. Anyone that wants to, you know, any one of those, in particular, the ones you see advertised today, is AWS, Azure, and Google, right? But if you wanted to say, let's say we have service providers that are now able to offer S3 kind of capabilities, right? You'll be able to do this very effectively. So they can provide an S3 service from their particular services or managed services to any other customers. And we actually have a couple of service providers that are now Cohesity customers, which are actually aiming to do that today for customers.
Ah, no. And what's nice here is since it's going through your data structure, your object store layout, it's actually able to do data reduction before it goes out to the cloud. So that's going to reduce the data transport costs both out and in when you do that sync because you already made that data efficient.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, that's one of the other benefits there because, you know, like I said before, where is the big cost? You know, you can get data lake, you know, prices for pennies on the penny. you know, that's when you retain the information there, but try to move that data back and forth. And then you know, that's when you start getting taxed by this stuff. If you start moving fully hydrated amount of data one way and coming back the other way, that's where you're going to start seeing the pain. But when you're able to do that effectively, like we can, number one, we can actually apply space efficiency features out in the cloud. But in, even when the data is going one way or the other way, it's kind of, it's efficiently moved around. So now we have the ability to do these things where it's, you know, more, much more cost effective than in the previous or some of the other current solutions that may not be able to do that today.
Now, you taking a step back here, you mentioned you guys are a software product, and obviously mm-hmm. you're not using any proprietary hardware, nothing, mm-hmm. you know, it's good hardware, but it's nothing fancy in that regard. I saw that you've got OEM deals now, it looks like, with HPE and then also a deal with Cisco, I believe.
You will be able to now buy Cohesity to run on a specific type of HP box, pretty much like we do with vSAN and ReadyNodes, right?
Okay.
They go through the certification process, all the hardware is in place, you buy the software, you put on the hardware you want, same thing for Cisco. So we have a lot of folks that are, you know, Cisco customers, and you know, they would like to have their Mercedes running in their data center. So they want to run, you know, software on their, you know, a compute platform of choice. And we could do that today based on that particular aspect, but they're not necessarily any sort of OEM deals.
Okay. So you've got a validation list, like an HCL
correct.
Type thing.
Correct.
The other side to that also is, when are we going to see you able to just run Cohesity on EC2 or Azure directly?
So we do that today. So that's something okay. that's actually in beta. So one of the things that Cohesity has is we have the implementation of the software, as we call it, the virtual edition. And we have something that we call cloud edition. So the cloud edition is, you know, you're able to instantiate compute, for example, in Azure, you know, straight out of the marketplace. And the way that it works is it's awesome, because think about it like this. When we're dealing with clouds, you know, we talk about consuming capacity storage, pennies on the pennies. That's one thing. But then when you're running compute in the cloud, that gets expensive, you know, because you're billed on the running time. So think about you instantiate a Cohesity cluster because you want to have it on the cloud in Azure, one of these mega places. And if you keep that running 24/7, you're going to run a bill that's pretty high. Everybody deals with that. But the way in which we use it, depending on how you want to use it, the compute instance are powered on when we put data in that place and then it's shut down, or we're back at, or the other way around. So they're actually instantiated, turned on as they need it, so that you don't continue running that compute process without having to do anything for it.
Got it. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, wow. So you can leave the data cold because you can just leave it on their blob storage or whatnot, as opposed to, okay. Yeah. I'm thinking about other people where they have to run multiple nodes at all times. They have to have an entire cluster just sitting there on EC2 in order to do anything. You guys can have substantiated.
Yeah.
That's cool. And then with the VMware on AWS, you guys could be able to provide NAS services or an actual backup target service and backup service, you know, to that VBC using the high-speed links from EC2 to the VMware VBC. So
yeah, and here's another thing that we can actually do because of that. So if you happen to be using Cohesity for the data protection part of it, because you don't have to, it's if you are doing it, and you have this information replicated out to the clouds, you can now use the cloud services through Cohesity for test and dev. Where if you need a VBC, if you need an environment for a day, two, three, four, five, with Cohesity, because the data that you have, your production data that is securely transferred and stored where it is, you can now instantiate that entire test environment with a couple of clicks and tear it down in just the same fashion, just for that limited amount of time, and not have to have, you know, an entire set of infrastructure on-prem to do that, which becomes, number one, a problem for procuring, you know, all those things. You can overcome them by simply utilizing that in the cloud already.
Well, and you're also not having to keep a huge running bill of infrastructure in the cloud to be ready. So when you want to do that, the data's largely been replicated. You power mm-hmm. on, do the final resync of your templates from your on-site, spin up, have your Elastic DRS, slam a bunch mm-hmm. of hosts into the cluster, build a vSAN, pull that data in, create those containers or that vRAW environment, substantiate it, then save the results, shut it back down, and then go completely cold. So that way you're really using the cloud. What it's best for is high elasticity and demand in that regard.
Exactly.
And so how would I deploy that? So if I wanted to do the web version of Cohesity, is that like mm-hmm. a service that I buy, or do I purchase like the web software and then I just put that up into my cloud of choice?
You go to the marketplace of choice, you know, Azure has the marketplace. You do basically do it from there.
Oh, nice. That's nice and simple.
And then the connections come, you make those connections and everything's encrypted in flight and at rest. So security all the way to the end.
What I really like about this approach is you're actually in the cloud. I've seen some other storage players basically go find a nearby data center to an Azure. Yeah, near the cloud. And we're going to throw an extension cable into the cloud and start trying to run NAS or high-speed link. But at that point, you've got a secondary data center provider. You've got a WAN link provider exchange. Mm-hmm. You're not actually ever – you're never in the VPC. And you're going to be paying egress in and out all the time whenever you want to do anything with that. Versus this, that data can rest on that blob storage cold. You're avoiding a hell of a lot of secondary bandwidth charges.
Right. And then here's where it gets even more interesting and where my head starts spinning immediately as I, you know, I like to just kind of think out of the box all the time. So you now get to a situation where you have the ability to successfully have a distributed data fabric across data centers, which would be in the cloud, hybrid, you name it, public, it doesn't matter. Because you have the ability to move and replicate the data that you already have and own successfully between data centers. So let me tell you, for example, if you know, as companies begin to move more and adopt the cloud consumption model, you know, the cloud is consuming regions or whichever term they decide to call it within their world. Having multiple data centers will be a much easier way to do it. One notion that I see in the industry that a lot of folks tend to think, oh, we're going to go to the cloud. The cloud within itself is a single point of failure. And let's not get it twisted. You go to the cloud, it doesn't mean that you're not going to have a single point of failure. The proof of that just recently happened, right? The poor guy who hit that command button on AWS and brought down S3 the other day, who ruined a lot of people. It's a perfect example of that.
Yeah, John was greatly inconvenienced that week. I think he was not able to send animated GIFs on Slack.
So yeah, the slash Jiffy command on Slack wasn't working. I could not post silly cat GIFs. Like it was, but that outage. And I mean, I heard someone call it out that, you know, 70-80% of sites, everyone was using this one region for S3, which is not how it's designed to be used, but developers should know better. But you're right. We have to make regional availability easy. And you guys being able to handle that for both unstructured as well as, unstructured file NAS base as well as object storage, that solves a lot of people's problems in terms of being able to redirect that. The other thing, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, is Scott Dietzen, I believe is how you say it, the CEO of Pure Storage. He came here and spoke on campus earlier this week. And he made an interesting observation that if you look at the total amount of data that's being generated, and then if you look at the total WAN capacity for bandwidth, and you look at the targeted growth rates of both, the WAN is not growing fast enough to handle all of this data. And when we start looking at, you know, internet, we call it Internet of Things, but like advanced analytics, these chemical plants where they're sampling a million times a second, you know, thousands or tens of thousands of sensors.
Yep.
There is too much data growing, and we need to analyze it. A lot of it's got to be stored and processed close to the edge.
Have you seen my keynote recently, John? What's going on here? We're like in sync right now. Yes, buddy. Yes, absolutely. I just delivered a keynote in Florida, and it was just this is what I addressed, and I called it the art of data management for the next industrial revolution. And the topic of conversation is specifically that. You're right. You know, we have physical limits where the bandwidth cannot handle the amount of data that's being put out. And the examples that I use current events. For example, when you think about, we're moving towards a world of full of autonomy and all these cars are going to drive themselves, right? The higher number of sensors those cars have, the more data they pump up to wherever it's going to go. And it gets into the petabytes daily, or depending on how that is. So imagine where is that information is going to be stored? How is it going to be managed and dealt with? But this is information that has to be processed. If that car hits a pothole, it has to be processed so the one behind it or the two behind it doesn't hit the same one. It has to be able to redirect. We do not have the ability today to do these things in the way that the information is coming in. So now the edge becomes extremely important. Being able to analyze information data is just critical. So having a platform that can do that, that can effectively do not all of it, some of it, it becomes critical, because the reason we're experiencing all these problems today, breaches, data leaks and all these things, is because of the amount of information that's coming in, and we cannot successfully sustain it, secure it, contain it, protect it. There's so many different silos to manage data, to do things in different functions. You know, if I want to do analytics, I need a whole new system. That system requires its own life cycle, people. It exposes its own set of risks. If I'm going to get the data out of there, I have to put it somewhere else where I can process it, look at it, and now I can do something with it. We don't have the capacity today to do that, because the fact that you have to move data from one place to another, that takes time within itself. That is a risk. That is another level that you expose yourself to potential problems. And it's extremely inefficient in today's world. And then when you look at the data center, we are the ones, we talk about Internet of Everything and things, but at the end of the day, that's coming into a data center near us, right? The technologies, we're some way, somehow, beyond the marketing, the things that are being spoken about at the different levels, we have to deal with this information. And it's really, really hard because we have challenges that are not only, they're not always entirely being delivered by just the technology itself, but they keep us from getting to where we need to be.
Well, it's sometimes it's physics, sometimes it's technology, but sometimes it's political, data sovereignty. This data can't leave. And so, you know, if I've got a site and it's in a country that there is not a major public cloud provider, I've got to process that data locally. I've got to store it locally. I can't archive it. And that was when recently I was out on APJ. I mean, seeing the challenges of that region with data sovereignty is a very strong concern.
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting.
So this makes it – so here again, when you start looking at this whole cloud consumption model, being able to have information only in the places where it needs to be according to those compliance, it's important. But being able to have that information within those regions accessible and highly available in the event one of these, you know, so-called clouds go out of service from one potential region to another. I thought that if, and I was working on when this outage happened, if we would have had folks with the right sort of vision, with the right level of technology integration, because remember, it's not all technology, it's also people process and these kind of things that become very political. If these things would have been in place, you could potentially mitigate it or diminish the impact of the outage, right? Because if you can have information that is replicated, safely stored, and this is the information that you already own and have. So think about this. If you can put that and replicate into different places and you can instantiate the infrastructure, the parts of the infrastructure where you have access back to your services in a portion of the data with a minimal sort of amount of loss, you could get back into business and be more effective and avoid these sort of massive outages that are happening, that happen, you know, every once in a while.
Hey, but if the outage is big enough, then just no one can get work done. It's kind of like when Office 365 takes a holiday. I mean, it's half the people is going to email anyways. They can't check their email. So
that's true. but you could, you know, if that does happen, that's a really bad sort of design and implementation. Nothing should have a single point of failure to that point. Because even if you cannot communicate within, let's say, across the world and regions, to some subset of that sort of world design infrastructure, there should be some level of communication.
Well, it's interesting. Like chemical plants are a key, you know, case for all these small little sensors in these things. And it used to be you just had the primary control systems and that we were worried about. But now the monitoring systems, which are generating this massive secondary data flow, you need to make sure you're collecting that information for analytics. And that analytics, sometimes it can cost you a lot. I know one group on the Gulf Coast, they lost their storage system and they weren't able to collect that secondary data. And because they didn't have the secondary data, they couldn't validate the quality of the product.
Right.
And they had to write it off at a loss. They had to fire sell the plastic or whatever was coming out of there at 90% because their downstream suppliers wouldn't purchase from them without that secondary data stream and analytics to prove quality. It's interesting seeing how secondary data is. It's no longer the junk drawer. It's as valuable, and it's where the insights come about how to tune and improve that processes and get that extra 5% efficiency, you know, on top of $100 billion that's going to make us some real money.
I think it's actually even more, which is why I was so, you know, when I look back and see and I sort of envision and saw what the potential of what Cohesity can do was that kind of drove me over the edge a bit. And I base a lot of my decisions and what I look at in current events. And I can give you some really good examples, and we've just discussed some of them too here, as to why this becomes so important. So number one, we've reached the point where more than ever, an organization's most valuable asset is the information they have and retain about their business and their customers. Because now, more than ever, as we move towards a more automated, autonomous world, this information can be acted upon more effectively than ever. Because now machines are using this type of information. So when you think about data retention, forget this whole just backup thing. I need to look at my information, analyze it, need to be act upon it. So we're now reaching levels of retention requirements to retain data infinitely. What does that mean is that I need to have solution, the right infrastructure to sustain that in the right way, in the efficient way, including all the things that we want to deliver, you know, as every organization asks from the cloud, from the data center, which comes down to cost, you know, all those things that every customer, every organization needs. We're there right now. And in actuality,
if you do the math and you look at what it takes to do this, organizations spend a hell of a lot more money on their secondary storage than they do on their primary storage, because your primary storage gives you the brutal performance that you want to create and generate the data you have to do to move on. But once you get out of that cycle, the secondary infrastructure, that secondary storage process is going to be bigger. It's going to grow infinitely. It's just it's always going to grow because you got to retain the information. And with what's happening today, it's obvious.
I was going to say, I've seen cases where that secondary storage, particularly when it's on tape, you end up with a team who's perpetually moving generations of tape. And that secondary storage, it's very sticky. It's very hard to rehydrate that data due to the performance characteristics. So you really got to make sure you have the right platform to land that data on, because you're going to live with it being in that format for a very long time.
And here's the other thing, too. I think, and we've done it when we were at VMware, and now I do it even more so. But when you go and ask the question to these corporations, these organizations, what do you do for backup? What do you do for data retention? What do you do for archival? Oh, yeah, we do tapes. And everyone says, oh, we want to get rid of tapes. Look, let's just be very real about this. You're not getting rid of tapes.
Nope.
there's just way too much information in tapes that through compliance, it has to be sustained and maintained. You can have a new approach to this data retention where you can adopt a non-disk format, one of these new sort of technologies, but your tape is not going to go away. And if you're going to introduce a solution that's going to cater to 10% or 5% of what of what's being used in the industry, you got a problem, because the whole rip and replace approach in the data center doesn't get you anywhere. And it's a much larger thing to adopt than the other approach, which is why one of the things that Cohesity lets you do, which is awesome, if you want to use tape, if you have tapes, plug into the tape. We could do the tape as well, right? But we're not telling you, get rid of your tape, go our way or the highway. Use the tape if you need to, if you have it. Here's the on-disk format, and then go to the cloud if you need to. So you have all those three things covered as a way of allowing you to adopt the newer, modernized, more modern solution as it fits your business, right? Because a corporation's affinity to change may be not the way it needs to be to adopt a cloud model immediately. They may have to go to tape first and archive and move to another place as part of that and gradually move towards that process.
So Rolla, we're wrapping up here. I know you got to get on a plane, but I wanted to ask you, you've been at Cohesity for a couple of months now. You've been traveling around the world talking about Cohesity and Cohesity 4.0. What's the main theme that you've been getting from some of your customers?
Three things. For the most part, everyone thinks it's just backup. And it's just one of those, it's one of the capabilities of the platform, one that's very well needed. We could do things with our backup software solution that is not many companies can do today. And I have a project with VMware in particular today going on right now, which will be unleashed later on once some things are validated, right? The other one is that, a lot of folks tend to look at what Cohesity is doing, and they see that we're doing a lot of different things. Or you do all these other functions and features and capabilities, and I hear the term jack of all trades, master of none. So they can't focus because, if you're going to do backup, you do backup. You should do X, Y, Z. Last week, I basically just had enough of that. And on stage, when someone brought that up, very respectfully, I said this. Anyone that takes that approach and speaks to what's happening today in that particular format, in that fashion, is a very close-minded person and is not looking beyond the problem today. Everything that we do in our lives, it's more than just single task. Everything a corporation does is more than a single task.
Of course.
We are now developing and doing things where multitasking and doing multi-purpose, multi-functions into a platform approach delivers better value than having individual services and siloed solutions doing what they do. So whenever I hear this whole thing about jack of all trades, master of none, you have to think about that. We have to evolve from that.
VMware does a lot more than virtualized compute.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. So when you think about what's happening there, I love almost having this conversation when it comes up, because I can diffuse it immediately. I'm like, look, everything you do in your life, do you walk around with a calculator, a phone in your pocket, a camera and a thing and a freaking thing? And no, you don't.
John does.
Right. Well, that's John, because he likes to just do that for himself. But he still has, you know, the more modern things with him, too. But the point is this, you know, at the times they tackle, I wanted to do this particular thing. And in the world today, you're hurting yourself. We are way beyond that. And it's been proven. And it's been proven not only in technology, it's been proven in corporate America and corporations across the world. Want me to give you the perfect example? One of the biggest examples today of what I'm even trying to say about jack of all trades, master of none.
Let's hear it.
Dell Technologies, baby. There was a consolidation of corporations and companies into one umbrella there, right? That's at a corporate level. And what do you think were the valuable pieces that were considered to make that happen? efficiency, right? Hmm. Being efficient, being able to now
scale customer, scale,
right? Being able to have these businesses work tighter together to deliver better value. That will happen. You know, that's the goal, right? So when you take that to technology, that's what happens. So the fact that we're doing things that are not just siloed individual point solutions, but these solutions enhance and play to one another, right? Delivers a lot of value than it is just to go in individually. And that's one of the things that, I mean, I think this summer probably spend the most time on, because I will diffuse that and will contest and fight anyone on that who likes to have a pretty good argument.
All right. So you said not just a backup, mm-hmm. and you've stomped out the argument of consolidation. What was the third one you said?
Mitigating risks, baby. Mitigating risk. The least amount of times that you have to move your data, leave it in different places, you leave less opportunities for you to be part of, become a victim of a breach. All right. Moving data is not good. It's never been good. Even though at VMware, we had the technologies forever to do that automatically. But we move data because we need to, right? There are certain requirements and functions that need to happen. And we have the technology in place to do that. The issue is that we now have so much data that needs to be moved around in different cases that we just don't have the technology. We're limited. We're physically limited to achieving that. And when it comes to having a platform, solutions that go beyond single point of capabilities in multiple places, the edge, the data center, cloud, everywhere you want it, that can allow you to extend and use your information effectively with the least number of copies, sure, replicas, yeah, right? Delivers a much better, secure world and more efficient with what has to be done with information.
I like it. Makes sense to me. So we're going to be at Dell EMC World in a week. How about you? Are you going?
Yes, sir, I am.
Is there going to be a big Cohesity presence there?
There will be some presence there. You know, obviously, the Dell EMC guys have been gracious enough to host us there. We can go there and participate with the rest of the folks in the industry and the leaders.
Will you be bringing a skateboard? It seems like every time I see you these days, you got a skateboard.
Yeah, well, you know, me and some tracks, so we give away some tracks. So I probably will bring a couple of skateboards, especially if you're looking to score one, yeah.
Yes, duly noted. Awesome. Well, John, listen, I know this guy's got to get on a plane. You got any more questions before we wrap this thing up?
I think Ronson and I had a pretty good nerd out session here, so.
It's good. We should do that more often. I love it. Let's kind of think outside the box for a minute. Yeah. Wait till I tell you what I could do with vSAN with Cohesity. You're going to flip out.
Oh, I can't wait, man. We'll have to have you on for that specifically. I know you guys wrote a white paper back in the day, but I know that with Cohesity 4, I'm sure there's a lot more goodness to share with us.
I'm coming after bigger things, making VMware, vSAN, and VCF way better, even when it sits in AWS.
I thought I saw a box sitting in Prom A that looked familiar. So
you better believe it. You better believe it.
Well, Rollinson, you know, from VMware, we miss you as a coworker, but we're glad to see that you're doing great things and furthering the cause of VMware, but only with secondary storage and Cohesity. So keep up the good work, my friend.
You got it, bro. Thanks for having me. Woo!
All right. Well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. Subscribe to us on SoundCloud or iTunes by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. Next week, we're heading out to Dell EMC World to talk to Mr. Rollinson and others. And so until then, bye for now.
Dope.
Paging Rollinson, get on your fancy jet. We're ready to take off.
Mohit Airlines.
Rollinson, we found your skateboard. It got sent to Denver.
'S my Bieber song.
Sing it.
Enough of this jibber jabber.